Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. And we're here on the air. Last week, we had a tough time because in our studio in Tempe that talks to the studio in Phoenix, we had a terrible time with the callers. And it was on our end. It wasn't on your end, obviously, because if you're on your phone and you're talking, you can hear yourself talking. It's fine. But it was on our end, and so we've been working on that most of this morning, and hopefully we'll have everything all situated. Today we have four people on the microphones. This is four guys that have been working on cars. We'll start with Kurt. Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell. You've been working on cars for how long?
I'm afraid it's about 50 years.
50 years. All right, so we got 50. And then next to him we got Alan, my son. And you've been working on cars for?
Probably 25.
Okay, so that's 75 years so far. And then who's this guy over here, Kurt?
He was hitchhiking. I picked him up.
Oh, okay. He works for you.
Yeah.
I think you're married, aren't you? Yeah, isn't he your father-in-law?
Yeah.
Okay, this is Eric, and Kurt's your father-in-law.
Yeah.
And you work at his shop.
No, it's my shop now.
Oh, it's your shop. Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, and how many years have you got?
23.
Okay, so we got 75 plus 23, so we're going to call it 100.
We're pushing it pretty hard.
Pushing it 100, and you're going to have to help me with the math. I started in 73.
And you got another 100.
Yeah. Oh, your mic just went dead. You're gone. So we have a lot of experience here, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'll start off real quick and tell you that I completely tore this up, but we're going to talk about Action Auto Repair anyway. And Action's right up the street from you.
Yes, sir.
Deer Valley and I-17. And I think what the most impressive thing for our group of guys and shops all over the valley is we're all really good friends.
Yes.
You don't find anybody bad-mouthing the other. You don't, and you guys are a mile or two away from Action.
Probably three.
Yeah. Okay. And he's a good guy. He knows right from wrong.
Yeah.
And he's a good snowmobiler. And he's a good fisherman. And I'm neither. But he's a good guy. Tom is, I met him in 1983 when he was selling the big box engine analyzers. Remember, everybody said, just put it on the scope.
Yeah.
Just put it on the scope. Remember those days?
Yep.
Well, do you remember what you paid for your first scope?
I was a cheapskate. I bought it used, so okay. I didn't pay as much as you, but it was several thousand.
Did you have an Allen or a Bear?
I had a Bear later, and my first one was a Sun.
Okay, fair enough. Sun was version one.
Yeah.
I never had one of those. Yeah. But my first Bear was $33,000, which is as much as we paid for our house.
Yeah.
And people thought, well, you just bolt it onto the machine, and the machine will tell you what's the matter with it. Nothing could be further from the truth.
No.
It gave you a tremendous amount of data, but you had to know whether the data was good or bad. So you do an electrical systems check, and you've got a 12-volt system, and when your idles up to 2,000 RPM, and your alternator should put out somewhere
13.3 to 14.8.
Exactly on a voltage side.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you look at that, you go, okay, well, I knew that.
Yeah.
The computer goes, oh, everything's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I already knew that.
Yeah.
But it did help those that didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, if they didn't know what they were looking at, they shouldn't have been on it in the first place.
You're right, but my machine would get used during the evening hours after I would gone home when all the guys would put their own cars on and play with it. You know what the one thing I remember the most was is the amp, inductive amp probe, okay, and cranking it over, and it told you which cylinder was low. You had to tell if it was a 4, 6, or 8 cylinder.
Yeah.
You had to tell what the firing order was, but you disable the ignition of the fuel and you crank it over and it'd say number 6 is performing at 22% and the rest of them are 81, 82, 83%.
Yeah.
That was a fancy high-end back then compression test.
Yeah.
But today we can still do the same thing.
That's the best way to still do it. I don't have to pull no mechanical apart.
So you're kind of lazy about pulling the plugs and screwing in a compression gauge
into
it?
I'll ask him if he took a compression test, and he says, I'm looking at the scan tool, and I'm like,
you know what? You know what? I got to tell you, he's got his thumb on the PCV valve, okay? And he's checking the suck on the PCV valve as it goes through 4-cylinder. And so he goes, oh, yeah, I got pressure. And just back in those days, we had a lot of fun, right?
Yes.
We had a lot of fun. And here, you know, the young tech, here, come over here and hold this wire for a minute. And then you'd crank it over a little bit. Hey, we have a caller. Let's go to the caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Darlene.
Darlene, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Mark. I'm calling about a 2011
Subaru Forester that has just about 45,000 miles on it, and my daughter took it in for an oil change during the week, and they also replaced her front and rear differentials. But in the diagnostic, they noticed that there was a visual oil leak found on both side cam carriers leaking engine oil. And their recommendation is resealing both engine cam carriers. Then they also found that the heating and AC found all four expansion valve O-rings leaking, found both AC compressor O-rings leaking, recommend replacing all six O-rings and recharge the AC system. Now, I'm wondering, is this normal for a car of 45,000 miles to have an oil leak?
Okay, but that's not fair because your car is 12 years old.
Well, that's true, too, okay. Yes. And they did say because of the low mileage, it's not getting enough driven miles to lubricate the engine. Now, the cost for doing the oil repair is $3,300.
Okay, stop. We're not going to be able to do numbers and dollars. Let's talk about the issues at hand.
Right.
Let's talk about O-rings.
Yeah.
You guys are all, Darlene, from my point of view, everyone's shaking their head. Everyone's laughing. Everyone's doing this kind of stuff. What were you thinking about the O-ring issue on the cams?
Well, that's actually, unfortunately, very common on these Subarus. They're flat fours, so the oil always sits there. They are slightly correct that not running it much doesn't keep the rubbers
pliable, soft, and stuff like
and
that.
So they leak sooner on mileage.
Okay.
But the age is, I mean, if this was normally driven, this would have 130,000, 150,000 miles on it.
Yes.
So
yes.
By that consideration, it's fairly normal.
Okay.
The AC O-rings, my dad he was just in yesterday, 17 Camry, that his AC was low. And it just happens. Rubber wears out and they leak. I mean, it's just common.
And sometimes they're easy to do because you suck all the refrigerant out of it. You pull the manifold off of the compressor or whatever connection it is at the condenser or the evaporator, and you put O-rings back in it. You bolt it all back up and you're done.
Yeah.
Okay. We make it sound like it's easy, but it's very time consuming.
Yes.
Because you got another half an hour to 45 minutes of sucking down the system after you get done working.
Yeah.
And then you have to make sure it doesn't leak and that you didn't create a leak and that you stopped the leak and then you fill it up to the proper amount. So, I mean, I'm making it a fast kind of thing. So the question is these leak, are they seeping, weeping, or are they leaking?
Yeah. I mean, she's the one that can tell us that because are you seeing anything on the driveway? I mean, anything
Darlene,
like that?
Any oil on the driveway?
No. They say it will only show up as you're driving it that you won't see any oil on the driveway.
That's not true. Darlene, let me explain. And we're not mad at you, and this is just BS from our industry. When oil falls away from the engine at 35 miles an hour, before that drop hits the ground, it's blowing all over the underside of the car. So when you're moving the car down the road at highway speeds, we look underneath the car and we see from this oil leak to the rear bumper, we see an 8-inch line all the way to the back of the car. We just follow the oil leak to where it's at.
Yeah.
So from them idea is you're not going to see it on the ground because when you're driving down the road, this oil just follows on the ground. That's if you're doing 1 mile an hour the whole time you're on the driving the car.
Yeah.
So I don't like the examples in it, and frankly, I agree on your case. You're talking about miles and time.
Yeah.
And the miles don't bother us, but the time bothers
us.
But in reality,
she doesn't sound like she has got enough really to worry about at this point.
Yeah.
I would wait until I see a drip on the ground before I would fix it.
If this was my customer, I'd say the same thing. The amount of miles that you drive, check the oil at every fill-up, make sure you don't run out of oil, and wait till it starts hitting the ground.
And let me just clarify that. Make sure it's above the add mark. That's all.
Yeah.
Don't add any oil till it hits the add marker below. Mm-hmm. So we don't really agree with what you've been told, and there's a couple of things that has been said here that suggests that you may have been talking to somebody who was programmed to say this and not be able to answer to it. So is that, does your air conditioning blow cold, or did it last time that you used it?
For the AC, I don't know, because it's my daughter's car, and she's the one driving it. Someone told me about the oil leak. What one should do is just keep adding oil until it gets worse. And for the AC, of course, I'd want to fix the AC because summer is around the corner.
I would just wait till the summer to see if it works good enough or not, and then deal with it.
Thank you for that. And I agree with you. I think, first of all, let's just wait, because we have the technology to, let's pretend, Darlene, that you have 4 ounces of refrigerant in your car. We suck out 3.5 ounces, and we weigh it, and we clean it, and we put it back in, and then we add another 0.5 ounce to it, and we're all done. And so we've put you back up. There is no such thing as a dipstick for the Freon in your car, but we can electronically use the equipment that we have that costs lots and lots of money to identify. And I think you'll all agree that when they come in and they got 17 ounces and it's a 30-ounce system, when we put 30, it's throwing ice cubes at them.
Yeah.
Because we know exactly how much to put in. So, Darlene, I wouldn't do the air conditioning until the weather turns. But if today you're driving down the road and it's 60, 70 outside and it's blowing doggone cold air on maximum and high speed, then I see no reason to spend the money, and I don't see any reason to spend the money on the oil leak. No. I don't.
Oh, okay. And my second question is, could you recommend I looked online and I only saw 2 recommendations in the Scottsdale area. Could you recommend someone else? I've usually had we've got 3 Subarus, and I've usually had them serviced at the dealer. But in this case, I would also like another opinion.
Okay, tell me where
you're
at.
Can you recommend a shop in Scottsdale?
Tell me where you're at.
She's on around McDowell and Scottsdale Road.
No problem.
And there is a shop down on McDowell, but I don't know if they deal with engines.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Now, that's Bell Automotive, and it's on 87th Street in McDowell.
Yeah.
And him and his wife run the operation, because Craig's dad and mother used to run the operation. And truly, on a 1 to 10 scale, Craig is a number 10 technician. So there isn't anything on any of your cars. And I'll tell you, my shop will pass on sophisticated engine or transmission overhauls. We'll buy another unit and stick it in, but we're not going to rebuild yours. So, and Craig is probably that same way, but he would be the first person. And Vicky is his wife, and both of them are there every day. Okay?
Okay. I prefer to deal with a smaller shop, because I think these larger dealerships, they also work on commission. So you never know if you're paying extra because they are on commission.
Okay, let me clean that up, too. Okay, let me explain. I'm going to politely disagree with you. Everybody works on commission.
Well, I know you all have to make a profit, because you've got to live, too. Inflation has gone up. You've got to make money as well.
But commission isn't bad. Commission isn't bad. A master technician may make 18% of the labor. A master technician, a guy on an hourly wage that doesn't have the skills that the master technician does, is going to be $12 an hour. So we convert what the labor is most of the time into this technician's salary, or his hourly rate. And the more experienced and the more qualified he is, he makes more money. But I doubt if many technicians out there are making more than 18 or 20 bucks an hour. And we're charging, I think our labor rate, Alan, is 175 today. Mm-hmm. We're at 175. So you can see what they take from the repair work on 1 hour's worth of work is nothing compared to the big bill. So I don't think I would worry about that, because we all are going to pay the technician an hourly rate, which mm-hmm. is a derivative of the hourly labor rate, or we're going to pay him a percentage of the labor rate that he just performed. Those are the only 2 options available to us. And, Kurt, how do you pay?
We do a modified. We do a base plus commission,
Base plus commission.
Yeah.
Okay, and we just pay a commission.
Yeah.
There, and the difference is most people would think, by the way, Darlene, our shop's 20 bays, and we're people look at us as we're not a dealership. We are a large independent shop in Tempe, and we're not affiliated with any cars. But I don't want you to leave with that idea that this commission issue is a big deal. It's really not. And the dealership technicians are paid the same as we pay ours.
Yes. Yeah. I think a very important key to that, too, is most of the technicians, good technicians, don't get paid off of parts.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
They
Thank
get
you
paid
for that.
Off of labor.
Labor only.
If you're getting paid off of parts, I can see where there's can be an issue with
right.
Know,
Thank
stuff
you for
unneeded
that.
Stuff.
Thank you. That's my son Alan, and he's right. We only pay everybody off of the labor. The parts goes to Mark and
so
Renee.
So they have no
motivation
incentive to sell unneeded parts.
But if they were being paid a commission on parts, then that
absolutely
would, that
yeah.
might create that.
Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Darling, we got to go. And the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have five of them, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Let's push a bunch of buttons here and get everything on the road. Kurt from Kurt's Automotive is sitting here with him, his right hand and his left hand, and I think it's his son-in-law. Is it really? Okay, I probably should push all these buttons here.
Yeah, push all the buttons.
So he's your son-in-law?
Yeah, he's a better technician than my daughter was.
Oh, okay. And so there's got to be a good story. When he came to you to ask, did this low-life son of a gun come to you and ask for your daughter's hand?
I don't remember.
Oh! He's old. I did. There was at least something my dad taught me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had to take advantage of that. I'm sorry. I just had to take advantage of that. Anyway, Kurt's Automotive is here. Kurt, what the heck's your name again?
Yeah,
Rastus?
Yeah. Nothing. Rastus.
Okay, nothing. And then my son Alan is here. My name is Mark, and the phones are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Alltrans is located at 40th Street in Washington. He's been around. Phil has been around a very long time. And if you drive up and down Washington and Jefferson, you'll see the old transmission up on the sign. They know what they're doing. And here's what's really good about automatic transmission exchange, ATE we call them, is he's been around since the very first transmissions that were 2 and 3 speed, power glides and torque flights and all that kind of stuff, all the way to the new electronics. The only difference between the old ones and the new ones is how we shift them. With the old ones, we shifted with vacuum, we shifted with throttle pedal, we shifted with speed, but today we shift with a computer. So the computer knows the optimum time to change from first to second gear. That's the only difference. It's just fundamentally on how you shift them. So if you need anything, automatic transmission exchange is a good place to go. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have five lines. They're all wide open. And if you have a car question, you certainly can. We talked a little bit during the break about a variety of things.
Yeah.
And some of them we're going to leave alone.
Yeah.
All right. But we talked about the oil leaks and the air conditioning leaks.
Yeah.
And I think to put it in a synopsis, all of us here at this table and all the friends that we have in this industry, we're capable of looking at the small amount of oil residue around O-rings and saying to ourselves, this ain't worth anything except get maybe a 14-millimeter wrench and maybe push on that nut a little or that bolt a little tighter.
Yeah.
It's just not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And then as far as an oil leak is concerned, I'm going to ask you to help Alan and I out.
Okay.
Alan's been working on my 2001 Excursion. And they put a timing cover on the 7.3, which means you've got to pull the motor out to do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, we have an oil leak on the timing cover, and it's a brand-new timing cover.
No, coolant.
Coolant, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Coolant leak on the cover.
Okay.
Now, we have to take the engine out again and replace it, because the coolant leak, you can actually see it's a hole in the cover.
Brand-new.
So you got a bad casting.
OEM.
A bad casting. Now, I want to know, I'm not going to tell you who said this, but I want to know what you think about this. What about they just drill a hole where the casting defect is, they thread the hole, and then they just put some kind of a brass plug or some kind of a plug with a copper washer in there and just seal it up and don't have to pull the motor out?
You know, I have a few technicians that would try that.
Okay.
I might even try it on my own personal thing.
I'm telling you, I'm trying it. No, that's not an option. I mean, access is going to be the hardest part, to be totally honest with you. Access. But I know I am trying that before I got it.
I'm yanking a 20-hour engine or 20, what is that, a 30-hour engine?
Yeah, it's 25, 28.
Yeah,
like
no, I'd take 4 or 5 hours getting access before I'd be yanking an engine again.
Yeah. As long as the casting isn't defective around the whole area, it should work fine.
And I thought about that. I thought about if you go in there with idea of a quarter inch, but when you drill it and thread it, you don't have a bunch of meat there, then you can go bigger. You could go to a half an inch flat plug.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different possibilities you can go
I'd start with a pipe thread first. I'd just go small enough and drill in just a pipe threader and then see if you could do one of those flat. You know,
self threads, and they cut threads as they go in, and they're beveled.
Yeah.
So they go. The tighter you go, the tighter they get.
Yeah.
They're what's that tapered? I guess is the name.
A little pipe thread. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. We're going to try something. I don't think JB Weld on the outside of the cover is going
to. Well, you're going to be 15 pounds of pressure pushing against it, so you're going to have to. If you could put a plug on the inside with the pressure against it, it may work.
An egg and salt and pepper.
What's that?
An egg and salt and pepper.
Have you lost your mind?
You remember that, don't you, Mark?
No.
Pepper is jagged,
yeah.
And I've known people that dump a bunch of pepper in it on a little leak, and it catches itself, and pretty soon the leak stopped. And
now
the egg helps solidify it.
Hold on. We have to make sure that they understand we're teasing them.
We pulled down stuff that smelled like breakfast table.
The key, for them to know this, somebody had a coolant leak. They tried eggs and pepper. It didn't work, and you found the eggs and pepper when you went in to fix it right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they swore by it.
Okay. I just got to make sure that because I can see it now. Local radio talk show host explains that a little bit of salt and pepper and some eggs in your cooling system will fix your coolant leak.
It might plug it clear up, but it'll quit leaking.
No, that ain't going to happen. Holy mackerel. Alan, I think the thing to do is access. I guess that's a real thing, is we're going to need to find out if we can get to it.
Access is going
to be issue. Where is it at, Alan?
It's on the side of the timing cover.
Oh, my.
It's an eighth of an inch from the block. I have meat there. I don't know that I have room for tooling in there.
Do you have the old one that you took off?
No, but I'm buying a new one tomorrow to look at it to make sure
so
that
we can measure it.
We're going to see the thickness and stuff.
Yeah.
But
how much meat's there?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Well, I'm worried about the engine block and then the timing cover that goes on. It's right on the side here. And it's clearly a casting mark. I mean, it's clearly a casting hole.
But we can also ask them if they want to financially participate in the R&R of this defective cover.
No, sure. Would. Yeah.
Would aluminum welding work if you drained the cooling system?
Well, that's plan B. The problem, again, is access. Yeah. I don't know. We don't aluminum weld. I've got a really good buddy that does that, but I just don't know about access getting up in there.
Yeah.
But that's going to be plan B.
Now, he's portable. Our aluminum buddy is portable.
Yeah.
So he could come here.
Yeah.
And then, two, if it's anywhere close to a gasket and it's a silicone gasket or a paper gasket, welding it might cause that problem as well. We're just going to...
I mean, worst comes to worst, you know.
It's coming out.
Already. Yeah, it's got to come out one way or the other. So, but we're going to give
it help. I'm thinking dip it in Permatex and see what happens.
The whole car? It is a Ford. It is a Ford, so maybe the whole thing in Permatex. Okay, and keep yourself your bacon and eggs to repair. Hey, we'll be back in just a few minutes. Back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. So Kurt is here from Kurt's Automotive. This vagabond who happened to walk by your shop one day and married your daughter. And you said yes. I think that's the big problem.
Well, like I told you, he was a good employee.
Oh. And then my son, Alan, is here as well. And what the heck's your name again?
Yeah. Hey, kid.
Eric.
I know, Eric. And so that's who you've got here. And I think you're a master.
Yeah.
And you're a master.
Yes, sir.
And so am I a master. And he's got all the diesel stuff down. So between him and the three of us, we should be able to help with people with questions. Let's go to Harry. Harry's on the phone. And, Harry, how can we help you today?
Yeah, I just heard that you switched over to the dark side with the Fixer Repair Daily, so I had to call in.
Harry, don't squeal on me.
Yeah. I think he's talking about my new Excursion.
Yes.
Yeah, when I heard about that from an unnamed source, I kind of thought I'd better call.
Hey,
I kind of like to know what are your plans with that? What are you going to build it to?
Okay, I can answer that. I can answer that just fine. First of all, Alan bought this Excursion from a customer of ours, and yours is a 2003. And he fixed it up, and he built this romping, stomping, awesome Excursion. And as you well know, the 7.3 is the big monster motor. It's the Chevrolet 427 right. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he had the interior done. He did tires and wheels. He did did you put steps on it?
No.
Okay. No. And so he did that. I liked it, and he wouldn't sell it to me. So I found one of my own, and I bought it, and I handed him the repair order from his, and I said, make mine like yours. And they're, ironically enough, they're both a gold and red?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're both the same color. There's a year difference between the two of them. So he's working on mine, and I didn't have to really write any paperwork. I just handed him his receipt of his, and I said, make mine like yours.
No, that's what happened to it.
What?
He didn't want you to have to be able to outdo him, so he put a crack in the timing cover.
So, well, sooner or later, we're going to be out there. We're running and stomping, you know what I mean? Sooner or later. But that 7.3, I mean, and then you've got the Excursion, which is the Suburban with rear air and all that other kind of
you're
stuff.
Right.
And so it's just, and it's no secret that people that are Ford connoisseurs, that 7.3 is the 327 kind of Chevrolet motor. Everybody wanted one.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, 602-508-0960. Harry, have you got anything else to say before we say goodbye to you? Because if you're going to hurt my feelings, do it now.
Yeah, my next question is, when you got a Dodge, was your Dodge brought up to your son's specs, too?
You know, I think his truck will outrun mine. But he's 3/4 and I'm 1 ton.
Oh, so you're going to use that weight thing.
I am going to use the weight thing. But now, I'll tell you what's really the truck that he's got that's just absolutely the fastest is an old 7.3 3/4 ton, isn't it?
No.
Oh, it's a 6.0 liter. It's
yeah,
a 6.0.
Yeah.
Two-wheel drive 6.0 liter.
There ain't no weight there.
And I don't know what he's done to it because I can't find the work order, but I know the thing's a monster. It's really, really fast.
Sure, so, if I go the same.
Say that again?
I think on your Excursion as compared to his, that could be the same thing, too.
Well, it's likely.
He's a big boy. You're a little bit shorter, so you may need some steps.
Yeah.
I think he's after your feelings, Mark.
Goodbye, Harry. Who's Gil? Gil, say goodbye to Harry.
Bye, Harry.
That's a nice way to say you've overstayed your welcome. he's going to sit there and just tease us.
Yeah.
He's going to just sit there and tease us.
Well, he's a great guy.
Oh, no, he is. He is. He's a lot of fun to be around and talk to and stuff like that. And I guess he comes in quite a bit. What he's got Dodges or Fords?
No, he's got a
He went and bought a Ford now.
He did?
Yeah, he's got a Ford EcoBoost, but he had a Chevy Duramax for years.
Okay.
And then he switched over to the Fords.
The Ford EcoBoost.
Yeah.
Now, that's a monster.
Yeah. Well, he ain't pulling trailers or no more or nothing.
Right.
He just needs to get around.
Those are good motors. Those are real good motors. You can
the
make
EcoBoost.
Real power on those things.
Yeah.
It's a twin turbo.
I understand, but the key words you just said there, you can build or add more power to those.
I mean, they're out of the factory now. What, 435?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Really good.
I mean,
the only problem is they just can't seem to put the manifolds together good enough.
Yeah. I mean, they have their own set of issues, mostly, you know, timing stuff, but... It's still a twin turbo V6, but you know, you're missing two cylinders, but I mean, it's still not a bad rig.
That what does mom have in her new Jeep?
3-liter diesel.
Diesel. Okay.
Yeah. That's
okay.
A V6. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a V6. Yeah. Renee wanted a four-wheel drive for up in Payson. And every time we go up and down the mountain when it's snowing really bad, we have to take my 1 ton. And she says, I want my own. And so she goes out and bought one of those new Rubicons.
Yeah.
And with the diesel motor. And that was the biggest thing for her was getting the consensus in the family with respect to which motor should I get, the gas or the diesel.
There's no consensus. Mm.
As far as you were concerned.
There's no consensus. There was one choice.
So anyway, that's what's been going on. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. There's four of us here, and we've got a wide variety of experience with Chevy and Ford and Dodge and Honda and Toyota, motorhomes, diesels,
Subarus.
we can answer any of those kinds of questions, and we're really good at settling arguments.
As whether it stays inside or not, it just depends.
Exactly. or whether we fix it or not. You know, just tell us what you got. 602-508-0960. Everybody, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're going to go straight to the phones because 34 minutes after the hour of whatever the heck I said, 10 o'clock, 10:43, and we're going to start rocking and rolling because we got callers, and we're going to start with Michael. Michael, you're first. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. I wanted to share with the listeners that the Batmobile is in Mesa at Streetside Classics now.
Oh, okay. Tell me about the Batmobile.
Well, I went in there yesterday to look at the cars. They've got about 100 cars in there. It's just a feast for the eyes. And, right in the showroom there was the Batmobile with the bat phone and everything, and I was thrilled.
Well, gosh darn, it's been a while since I've seen that car anywhere.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what transmission or what drivetrain it's got in it or anything like that at all.
But they got a 460 in that one, but the original one had a 428.
Okay, so it's a Ford chassis and Ford drivetrain?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't even know that. Well, why don't you check to see if we can rent that for the day, and then we'll get together and we'll all drive around town and see if the police can catch us.
They're closed Sunday and Monday.
Okay. All right, and where was that at?
It's a 614 East Auto Center Drive. Just east of Larry Miller Ford.
Okay, well, just give me the name of it, though.
It's called Streetside Classics.
Streetside Classics. Okay. All right, thank you very much.
614 East Auto Center Drive.
Okay, I got it, Michael. Thank you very much. Keith, you're up next. How can we help you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm trying to replace a car for my daughter. The two we've kind of narrowed it down to, I was hoping I could just get an opinion. It's either a 2008 Toyota Solara with just under 100,000 miles, or a 2014 Volvo XC60, similar miles, about 100,000. I know there's a little price difference in the two of them, but as far as longevity, cost of repairs, that kind of thing, can I get an opinion?
I'd stick with the Toyota.
Yeah, the Toyota's going to be way cheaper to repair.
I'm of the opinion the same way. Yeah. Given you could have just said Toyota and Volvo, and I would have found on, there's no pattern failures that came to my mind on the Toyota. All I know is that the Volvo is just going to cost more money to fix.
Yeah, their parts are higher and harder to come by.
Yeah, and so I think of it, and at 100,000 miles, does it bother you guys at 100,000?
No.
Well, let me ask you a question: how many miles is the truck you're driving got on it?
My truck's only got 60 on it. Eric's has got right at 200 on it. Okay. And I got another one at the shop with 530.
And we've got the same thing. Yeah. Just about everybody's car in my family has 100K or more. Mine's at 146.
Okay.
Yeah. So here's the thing, because this comes up a lot. Every time we do a motor, it's because the idiot behind the wheel overheated it or ran it low on oil or abused it. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yes?
Absolutely.
Okay. Right.
And so we rarely have anything that comes in that just fell apart or the head gasket came apart or whatever. But every time we see a motor die, give me, why do motors die and come to your shop? What are the common denominators?
Overheating is the most.
Bingo. Yeah. I'm with you. And okay. Running them low on oil.
Yeah.
Yep. Or not doing enough oil changes.
Yeah. Or the maintenance.
Yeah.
The maintenance. Right. Those are the three things. If you can stay on top of that, then you're in good shape. So
okay, one follow up if I may.
Go.
You kind of let me down from my train of thought saying you bought a Jeep. I have a brother who's a claims adjuster, and he's told me for 20 years, don't buy Jeeps; they fall apart at 100,000 miles.
Oh,
the last Jeep I just sold had 226, and I four wheeled it all over the United States.
Yeah. I've sold tons of Jeeps with 200,000 miles on them, and I just bought one that has 150 on it.
But I think the point here is first of all, I agree with you two guys. Yeah. Okay, they're Jeeps. Let's go back to 69, 70, 71, 72.
They were trouble. I had one.
They were big pieces of dog turds.
Yeah,
they were bad.
Okay.
They overheated. The air conditioning didn't work. You couldn't keep the front tires on them. The frame would move back and forth on you. The rivets, you had to spot weld all that stuff. So we still got people that go back when Fred Flintstone was around and say, that car is a piece of crap.
Yeah.
Well, it's not today. So no, we disagree with the idea that because it's a Jeep, it's a piece of crap. We disagree with that.
Yep.
Awesome. Gentlemen, as always, thank you so much. Appreciate your opinion.
Thank you very much. Richard, you're up next.
Hey, gentlemen. A year ago, I bought a 2007 Toyota Corolla SE with 66,000 miles on it. I put four new tires on it because it actually had the original tires.
Okay.
And the owner had the oil changed every 3,000 miles. What should I be looking for in the future as far as maintenance goes?
So it's got 66 on it now?
Yes.
Okay. I think the owner's manual will give you all you need. I think.
Did he say an 07?
It was a 07 Corolla. So
correct.
A timing belt, because of the age of the car.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if that was a chain or a belt on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to look. I don't remember it off the top of my head.
If it's a chain, and go to Rock Auto, punch your VIN number in and look at timing and see if it's a belt or a chain. You can do that yourself, Richard. If it's a belt, if it's a belt, yes.
It's due because of age.
Age,
more than anything.
Yeah. Of time in service.
Right.
If it's a chain, then no.
No.
It's not. And your owner's manual will give you the best thing, but I think you're going to do all your fluids in the first 100,000 miles.
Yeah, and with his age on that, he's probably looking at hoses and stuff before the summertime gets here.
You took the words right out of my mouth. You've got so many moving parts here, but we're not going to talk about brakes because that's something that's completely different, not related to time or miles or stuff like that. But I don't think that I'd want any of my kids going with your kids if they happen to go to Tucson for the day and this thing, if it had factory belts and hoses on it.
Yeah.
I think also you take the upper and the lower hose and the old fan belts and stick them in the corner of the trunk. So if you get stuck in Sholo, Arizona on a Sunday morning, you can find somebody to put on the old belt or the old hose.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, I did put an alternator in too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
We
don't see any pattern failures that I can tell you this much. Toyotas are no different than the rest of them. You don't want to get this thing into the red zone and think another 20 miles is going to make it. Okay?
No.
So when the needle gets into the red zone or when it gets close to the red zone, it's time to raise the white flag and call a tow truck because these get towed into our shops all the time.
All the time.
All the time. And they're just crispy because, I only had another 7 miles to go or I was only 10 minutes away from home. And it's always going to be bad news. So the aluminum motor, aluminum heads, they don't like overheats. Try to avoid that, okay?
Okay, great.
Right. Thank you, Richard. Thank you. Brian, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for being there. I have a 2009 Scion XB, and I don't have any dash lights that are indicating anything. Regarding my front end, I don't have any pulling or irregular tire wear, but as I drive down the road, I know I have electronic steering, and it feels like every few miles there's a big gust of wind. For a millisecond, it pulls me to a different lane. It feels like it could be a servo losing position or a sensor or something. Is that something I can go in and have diagnosed with a tech stream or something, or somebody, because I don't hear any clunking when I go over bumps or anything. There's no large noise underneath the undercarriage.
Okay, but all of that,
regular tire wear.
All of that has to be verified by the guy that's going to be responsible for working on it and finding out what's wrong with it. So you can certainly write that up and hand it to him and say, this is what I have found. But to be perfectly honest with you, none of us are going to pay attention to your list because we're going to go do it ourselves.
Okay.
We may use your list as an outline to check each individual thing. But
think that's electric steer.
I don't either. How many miles are on it?
270.
270? Okay.
Yeah.
Is the rack, it's a Scion, 09
Scion? Yeah,
Scion
XB.
What's our Scion, Eric? What year?
I think it's 07 or something like that.
Yeah, I was thinking we got one that we use in the shop, and I know it ain't electric steer, so I don't know. An XB like that.
Okay, well, the only other thing you could do is if you can figure out a way to make it happen, then you put the wife in behind the car, and on a Sunday morning you get side-by-side down, Camelback Road when nobody else is out there, and you just watch it, and you're on the phone, and she says, okay, it just happened, and you're watching the front tires. Or you hang out the passenger window, or somebody else hangs out the passenger window. But to be honest with you, let me ask you all this. Is this something we could probably go duplicate if he instructed us on how to do that?
Yeah, he would have to figure out how it does it. And this is the hardest part about intermittents is, get having the customer tell us how to make it do it.
Exactly, how to make it do it.
Yeah.
And so that if you can do that, and if you can practice making it do it, then you can make an appointment with the shop and say, do you have a good front-end guy, somebody to go with us? Because I'm thinking when we start moving the front end, jerking left or right, it seems like that there's some kind of a bushing or something that's holding this, maybe not holding the rack solid.
On the top of my head, lower control arms are very problematical on these things, okay. And they shift that lower tire, and it'll move. So all they have to do is just hit a little rut in the road, and then it shifts that.
Okay, now if it's lower control arms, is that something that you'll be able to see if you just gently apply the brakes and people? Okay.
Yeah, and
okay.
People don't realize it.
Okay, Brian, you're going to get in the car, and you're going to practice taking your foot off the brake,
and
you're going to coast forward and then abruptly hit the brake.
Yep.
And then you're going to teach your wife or anybody you want how to do that. And then you're going to stand outside the car, and you're going to watch the left front as you're rolling, and then abrupt brake, and then you're going to watch the right front. Neither one of those tires should move forward or backward.
Right.
Okay.
That's how to check it out. And then next time the plate passes you in the Church of God, then put an extra $10 in it for Eric.
Do that every time.
Okay.
I've looked on your list of shops. There's one at 99th and Grand that I can go to that's on your approved shops
Yeah, Autodynamics.
Autodynamics. Yeah.
But you can do that yourself, and then
then I can have more information to take in there.
Right. And not only that is if you come into your shop and you say, hey, I want to show your front end guy this and have him, and I can duplicate it, you've saved yourself how much money?
$75, $100.
I think that's conservative. $50 to $100. You've saved yourself $50 to $100 if you can show them what you did.
Okay.
And so that's what I would do if I were you. Okay.
Excellent. Thank you guys so much, and have a great, wonderful day.
Thank you. Same to you. You know, working on cars is fun.
Yeah. Until I bang my head against the wall and it hurts.
Yeah.
You have a casting that's bad. 28-hour motor. Yeah. No, it's fun before that.
It sounds like Alan's a little bitter, don't it?
You know what?
I'm a lot more bitter this morning since we found out it was a casting. I mean, I can deal with the mistake.
Because
John doesn't make many mistakes. I can deal with that. And I understand it's a mistake on the casting. It's no one's fault. But
why did it happen to me?
No.
Why couldn't it have been an easy one?
Yeah, no kidding. Right in front. You know, give me one in front or something.
Let me draw the picture that we need to draw. Folks, in the front of your engine, whether it's a four-cylinder or a six-cylinder or a V8 or whatever, at the front of the engine is your timing cover. And the timing cover covers these gears that run between the crankshaft, which is the lower part of your engine, to the camshaft, to the upper part of the engine. So we have these gears. In this particular application, this big giant diesel motor that probably weighs close to a 747, and it's every bit as big as any big engine out of an earth-moving equipment.
Yeah, it's
the motor on this is just giant. This motor, the entire front of the motor is about 3.5.
It's probably 3 feet wide.
Three feet wide. Mm-hmm. This is part of the mount. This is how the motor sits, right? And the frame, within the frame?
Yeah, it just covers. It's aluminum that goes on the...
So this whole front of this engine that's 3 foot wide, and I'd say probably 18 inches to 20 inches tall, this whole piece bolts to the front of the motor. In order to replace this piece, you have to remove the engine. So everything in the engine compartment is moved out of the way, and then you go in and pick up the engine, and you pull the engine up and pull it forward.
And that's not typically normal. This one just has to because the oil pump has a thing. So you have to drop the pan to get it off. But in order to drop the pan, you got to pull the motor.
Okay.
So that's timing covers typically can be pulled off in the car. In this particular one, it's not.
And 99% of the cars we work on, we can take the water pump off. We can take the front of the motor off. We can take the timing cover off, and we can replace the timing chain or timing belts. We can do all of that stuff without pulling the motor.
Right.
But this motor weighs as much as those cars. And Alan, I just say, Alan, this clearly is just God getting even with something you did wrong.
Which thing is the problem? And how many more do I have?
Because he and everybody should know that this is my car. This is my excursion. And so they're fixing it up. And I gave John, the great technician, I gave him Alan's receipt on his. And I says, make mine like his. And he goes, I don't have to paint them. They're exactly the same. They're the same ones. But the fun of it is these things are monsters, as you well know. But this is just an up and down. This is something that just happens. And it happens to you guys as well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you've had a motorhome at one time or another that you had to take something apart twice.
Yeah, those are about the worst. We got a Cummins in there right now that we've got a Jasper engine in, and it's acting up.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, the good thing is Jasper's typically a very helpful person.
Yeah.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here talking about cars. And today you have four guys that have a total of, I think it's fair to say we're in the 100 to 150 hour, years range.
With Eric's math, after you, it put us over 200.
Okay. All right. Yeah. 200. Then, but I think Eric fibbed on it.
So
I'm going to go to 150 to 150 years to 200 years. That's okay. And you certified master?
Yes, sir.
And you're certified master, and so am I. And he's got diesel, and I don't have diesel. So
Eric does.
Do you? Okay. Yeah. And it's a good way to do it. Now, Kurtz is up at I-17 in Bell Road.
Yes, sir.
And I tell people, there was a time your wife was involved in customer satisfaction.
Yeah.
Is that still the case?
She still is. It's a little different the way we do it now.
Okay. Okay. In the old days, a first customer would expect some gifts from your wife.
Yes, sir.
And thank you. And literally she'd knock on their door and say thank you.
Yes.
Okay. It's a little harder to do it now because I don't know about you, but new customers are flooding the place.
Yeah.
They're moving around a lot. People are moving around a lot.
Yes, sir.
But how long has this Vagabond been working for you?
It's coming up on 22 years.
22 years?
What's a year? See, he worries about the little
details.
He does.
And how many years ago did you marry his daughter?
22 and a half.
And 22 and a half years ago, was your head screwed on right?
What came first, you working there or you meeting the daughter?
Meeting the daughter.
Oh, okay. Okay.
They got married, I said, you're not starving her to death. Like I said, he was a better technician than Amy, so I hired him.
Were you doing that prior? Were you a mechanic prior?
No.
I was good at tinkering.
Okay.
Either, I don't know if whether I broke or fixed more, but I was good at tinkering. Okay. So
he was only 18, Alan.
Okay. Okay.
I just turned 19 when I hired him.
Okay.
Oh, I know exactly how you feel. I walk in here Monday morning, and his truck is holding down three bays, and it's in 4,000 pieces. And I said, this started out as an oil change. Oh, I know. I stripped the plug, and then I got the pan off, and then the crank needed to be done, and now all of a sudden we're putting a new motor in it.
I think it's something with the younger generation.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so. I remember a few 383 strokers that kind of blew up because things weren't done right.
It wasn't that they weren't done right. I had a bad fan clutch.
Oh, no, they were taken into a zone that we probably shouldn't have taken them in, okay? You young whippersnappers. Okay, well, we're going to go to Bob. And, Bob, how can we help you today?
Morning, guys. When you talk about pattern failures, we've got a 2014 GMC Sierra with the 5.3 with the active fuel management.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the original owner. And it's had regular oil changes, you know, with 20-30% left on the oil life monitor, and there's no problems yet, but I'm just worried about that lifter, collapse lifter thing, and then it takes out the cam and the whole deal.
You should be.
Yeah.
Not only that, you should be worried about the tranny, too.
Yeah.
Well, the tranny's already been done at 140. That was done.
Okay, well, okay. There you go.
There is nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. The best thing to do is actually we have a cleaner we run through on a lot of these that actually dissolves the carbon, which causes some of the sticking. It extends the life, but we can't prevent all of it. It's just a bad design.
We get in the habit of we shut it off electronically. I don't know that prevents it, makes it go any longer. It just, you know, the lifters, instead of being always, you know, pumped up and then not pumped up and then pumped up and then not pumped up, they always stay pumped up. So, I mean, we've had decent luck with that. But, yeah, we do a ton of them.
We're using a device that allows us to just put them in to take away the option of killing cylinders.
Right. Cylinder deactivation.
Deactivation. Yeah. So you're going to run on all the cylinders all the time. And we've had good luck with that.
Yes.
And we think that – and this didn't happen to the cam and the lifters before we had active fuel management.
That's correct.
We had extremely less, but it was – we did a few.
Okay.
Well, and it's always the DOD lifter. So, yes, it's directly correlated to active fuel management, the DOD.
Okay.
Because they are a different lifter.
Displacement on demand, DOD.
Yeah, active fuel management.
Otherwise, you go from a four-cylinder, six-cylinder, eight-cylinder, whatever. But what the computer is looking at your throttle, looking at the hill you're climbing, looking at your fuel economy, looking at your vehicle emissions, and it's deciding you can do this in fourth gear, with four-cylinder, and it kills the rest of them.
And by the way, Chrysler has the same issue. So they haven't figured it out either.
We've done a ton of Hemi cams.
Yep.
So there's no real magic to this.
No.
We don't have an answer.
One question.
Go.
If he brings his truck in at 143,000, it's got no problems, can you just disable the AFM without having to replace, tear the engine apart?
Yes.
And what's the rough cost on that then?
$250 to $300.
Is that the thing you plug into the OBD port?
Yes.
You just plug the thing into the OBD port?
Yep.
Now, another thing you can do if you want is do an oil sample every other oil change and look for growth of oil, because you're going to start shedding cam and you're going to start shedding lifters. So if you do an oil analysis, you'll see the growth, but if the growth doesn't change or the numbers don't change from oil change to oil change, then you're not shedding.
Yeah, even if you are shedding, you know, you don't just go in and do the lifters, because you've got to pull the heads, and you're right there. If you're going to do the lifters, you do the cam as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, And that
costs approximately?
It's $35 to $55, depending on
the damage.
Lots of different stuff, yeah.
Okay. $3,500 to $5,500. And that's just a camshaft and new lifters.
Yeah.
That's not a motor.
Yeah.
That's not heads.
And that's with the complete understanding. If we pull that cam out and that lobe is gone, that metal went somewhere. So you take a long, hard look at, you know, we can do this $35 to $55, but if we've got metal in all the, you know, cam bearings or crank bearings,
And then an engine is then bid at between what and what?
We just did one. They're 12 to 15.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
12 to 15,000. Now, in that 12 to 15,000, we got an engine and we got hoses and belts and coolant and oil and gaskets and motor mounts and cooling system and blah blah blah. We got it all.
Motor mounts for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
So you do a ton of motor mounts on those things. Huh? I mean to tell you.
So there you go, Bob. Aren't you glad you called?
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, just shut it off. Again, I don't know that it's going to help, it gives you a little bit of insurance.
All right, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we have another caller, and who might that be?
Hey, good morning to Rich.
Rich. Good morning, Rich. How can we help you?
Hey, how you doing? I have a car and a truck. And I'm going to be looking for a new vehicle anywhere between $30,000 and $60,000. You know, I can go a little higher depending, but I need it. I can't get like a Camry or an Accord because I can't get down that low due to back problems.
Okay. Well, give us your
anything
top three, and we'll vote on them.
Well, I like the Nissan. I like what used to be the Murano is a Rogue, and then. Kia, you said Kias were nice, and I know there's like a Palisades, but whatever, smaller than that.
So we got the Kia and the Rogue.
I stay away from the Rogue because that's CVT.
Okay.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so the CVT for everybody else is constant velocity transmission, so it doesn't really have gears. It's got a big old clutch on it, and it's like the old go-karts that we had as kids, and you just throttle it up until the clutch locks up. So the CVT is something none of us like that. It's some kind of a fuel economy. It was sold as the new transmission, and it would make your life better, and all the bald guys that bought it thought they would grow hair on their head, and all of that's BS. So we don't like CVTs.
About the Toyota or Honda small one? I don't know if it's the RAV4 or the Toyota.
The Honda CR-V or the Honda?
Yeah,
The CRV.
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, Honda and Toyota for us, that's go-to cars.
Yeah,
I mean, agree. Nissan doesn't fit in my category. Doesn't fit with the Honda and the Toyota.
No.
Gotcha. All right, and then real quick, I have two cars, and both will run the window down, but won't run the window up from the driver's side. Do I pull the Mark Salem special, pull the panel out, tap it with a screwdriver?
No, just beat it with your hand.
Call the parts place that ends with a Q.
Go, Eric.
Well, I'm going to say if it rolls down, the motor's intact. I mean, I wonder if the switch just has got bad up contact.
He brings up a good point. I didn't think of that. Thank you very much for thinking of that. You're going to pull the door panel off to do the diagnosis anyway.
Yeah.
So either you got a bad switch or
the motor's weak.
Yeah.
And it just can't push the pressure.
Right. But you could go in there and perhaps lube the regulator.
Although if the motor's weak, he can pull up on the window as he's pushing up, and it will assist it, and it should go all the way shut.
Thank you for that.
That would help diagnose the motor real
fast.
That's it. Can you grab a hold of the – don't use a pair of vice grips. That'll shatter the whole window. But just grab a hold of the glass.
It works from the driver's passenger side. Going up and down, but it doesn't work from the driver's side. So that
it's a switch.
It's a switch.
Okay.
All right. So next time
the recycle yard that ends in a Q.
No, I think you go to Rock Auto and put in the VIN number and find a new switch for it. I don't like the idea that you're going to put a used switch in there off of a car that had 330,000 miles before it caught fire.
That's been sitting in the rain since 83.
It's sitting in the rain since 83.
Gotcha. Because on the truck, I've already done two, and I'm like, come on, this can't be that bad.
You know, just go to Rock Auto. And let me just clarify Rock Auto. Rock Auto has access to every inventory of every place in the whole wide world. A friend of mine called Steve Ambrose used to work for me 150 years ago in the 70s, and he was one of my mechanics, and he's now in Alabama. So he calls me and he says, can you find an electric rack for my Ford truck? And I said, as a matter of fact, I can. Give me your VIN. So I get in there and I find it. There's 30 miles away. And he's been told by everybody within a 200-mile radius that they're not available, they're on back order and all this kind of stuff. So I said, hey,
so
it's
Rock
30
Auto
miles away.
Basically and, Amazon?
What's that?
Rock Auto was basically Amazon?
For car parts, but anything? Rock Auto has what no one else has. They have access to all these inventories, all the part numbers, everything. And so they found this rack and pinion 30 miles away from where Steve lives in Alabama, and it was in a Motorcraft box.
Wow, beautiful.
So it
all
could
right,
have been in a box.
Very much.
It could have been in a box of a variety of other vendors that we use.
Right.
But that's why I'm telling people go to Rock Auto because they'll find it for you, and all they need is you got to put your VIN in, and the VIN tells them what part you need. And that's the easiest path of least resistance as opposed to going to the auto parts store on the corner with the kid that you was hired day before yesterday that doesn't know what the front of the catalog and the back of the catalog do. So you're just better off to
use
the
too many of them out there now.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you guys very much.
Okay.
Great show.
You bet. Thank you. That was Rich, right?
I think so.
Or do we have Rich in hold?
No, that was Rich.
Yeah, that was Rich. I thought it was Rich. It was the option of all of them. Okay, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We have five of them if you have a car question. And we're really good when the husband and wife can't decide on something. Okay, we're really good at that. So if the wife says you should do this and the husband says you should do this and the husband says don't put it in overdrive, put it in drive, and the wife says no and all that, we're really good at that. So just call us up, 602-508-0960, and tell us what the issue is. Try not to tell us which side you're on. You're just going to be the neutral person that's going to present the problem to the team, and then we'll vote. And there's four of us.
We're all going to be on the half.
We're all going to be on the same page. It doesn't really make any difference. Okay, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back.
The mechanic raised up from under my hood and he shook his head.
Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 to 12 talking about cars and car repair stuff. We have Don and John. We're going to do those guys, but we have three open lines, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Guys, I'm going to get to you, but first of all, I got to tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Brian and Thelma come from families of gas stations. Their dads and their mothers worked at gas stations and owned and operated gas stations from the 60s and the 70s. So Brian and Thelma have been around the smell of gas their entire life. The only shop in Mesa I can recommend, the only shop in Mesa I will recommend, is Thompson's Auto Repair. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and they're worth, no matter where you're at, they're worth the drive. They're good people, and when you meet Brian and Thelma for the first time, you'll understand completely how come I'm so excited about them being part of our program. Let's go to the phones, and let's start with, Don. Let's go to Don.
Good morning.
Good morning.
From another mother. How are you?
Good, good.
Hey, just so you know, I don't know what years it was. I have towed a couple of Renegades and Wranglers in with the diesel engine. Don't know the circumstances, but or the mileage.
Well, we're
and
well
I just
aware.
Thought
of
I would give you.
Yeah, of the issues with those trucks, we see them very often because they come in the Rams as well. So. The 1500.
Yeah.
So tell
those
us what's
are Cummins, aren't they?
No. It's a three liter eco diesels.
It's a VM Motori build.
What's that?
VM Motori, I believe is.
I don't know who the manufacturer is, but excuse me. The problem is they get the EGR built up. It's the EGR issue. EGR valve gets plugged and ends up melting.
Oh, kind of like the 6.0 and the 6.4s, right?
Yeah, exactly like that. Yeah. The problem is the real issue is driving them. They need to be driven. I have a customer that has
right.
about 30 of these things, and it's interesting because if I get a 19, like let's just say 2019 or 2020, and it has 150,000 miles on it, it needs no work and has been perfect. But if I get a 19 or a 20 in there that has 12,000 miles on it, it needs a ton of work because it's never being driven, or it's driven 2 miles, 2 miles, 2 miles, 3 miles, 4 miles.
Yeah,
so they just need to get out and be driven and regenerate.
So the eco diesel that has this carbon buildup, this problem, that you have to drive them like you stole them. You can't baby
right.
them.
Well, it's not babying. It's long periods of time so that regenerations can complete. Particulate filter regeneration.
So you're not going to buy this to go to work 4 miles away every day and come back?
I would not, no.
Okay.
No, because my next-door neighbor is doing that with his 7.3, which has only got it's an 02 with, you could eat off of it, but he's only got 32,000 miles on it. Wow. He bought it new. So.
Okay. Well, and that falls into the same kind of category as too little is as bad as too many. But the problem with this eco diesel is just carbon. And if you drove it like you stole it, and if you put it on the road, and you don't do short trips on it, and you throttle the damn thing to the floor every once in a while or a lot, then you're going to be a lot better off.
Yeah, well, he's 85 years old. He sure as hell ain't going to do.
Well, Don. I'll just get a note from your wife to go over there and take her car around the block a couple of times. My God.
Yeah, really.
This Don, he drives one of those big flatbed tow trucks that's like 40 feet long.
Oh,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
I got 80,000 on my 22. So.
Yeah. And he's one that he can back into a McDonald's drive-through and pick up a semi. You know what I mean? He's a really good
guy. Yeah.
He's one of those old guys. Those old guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Don. Thank you very much for that. Thank you. John, you're up next. John, how can we help you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2014 Buick Enclave that I put a new set of tires on. And ever since I put the new set of tires on, it seems like I have vibration at highway speeds in between 60 and 75. And I've taken it back multiple times. They've balanced and rotated tires. And I've asked them to take it for a road test. And they say they have. And then, 500 to 1,000 miles into it, the vibration's right back. And finally, I took it to a different location of the same chain. And they did take it for a road test. And they acknowledged that, yep, there's a vibration. It's not in your tires. Tires are well balanced. It could be your transmission or your axle. So,
okay, well, stop for a minute. Stop. All that doesn't mean nothing to any of us. We got some questions. Is the steering wheel shaking, or is the seat of your pants shaking when you're driving it?
Seat of the pants.
Okay. Well, that would be in the back end of the car.
Okay.
That's not the front end. That's not the front drive axles. That's not none of that.
No.
If it's in the seat of your pants, it's in the back end of the car. So take the back tires and put them on the front. Take the fronts and put them on the back and see if it changed. And
I can tell you. I could have finished your story for you, but I'll tell you this. I can't tell you how many times people say, I got this. No, it's not the tires. No, it's not the tires. I've already had them bounced. I could care less. I fix more tires that they were just balanced than I do, you know, anything else. The only thing that sounds a little weird is you said that it's good for 500 or 600 miles and then it comes back?
Correct.
Okay. That's a little strange. The only thing I can tell you is what we've seen, and it doesn't happen very often, is you put new tires on, and a lot of these new tires, you got to use a lot of lube to put the tires on. And if it's a chrome wheel or it has a really slick bead surface, we've seen them, you know, after a couple hard stops, that will actually rotate the tire on the wheel, which throws it back out of balance. It usually happens quicker than 500 miles, but if it happened after the tires, it's related to the tires.
Okay, and so
like
here's what
it was a
what you do is
not a lot of weight,
is get a black magic marker, get a yellow crayon, and mark the valve stem.
Yeah.
Okay. On the tire, and then drive the thing and see if that mark moves. And if that mark moves, then that tire's rotating on the wheel. It also should. You could also inflate it to the maximum inflation on the side of the tire, and that would might help it out as well. But the seat of your pants is going to be a tire balance in the back end of the car. That's all there is to it. I don't know anything else that's back there.
And he said Buick Enclave, right?
So, yeah.
It's a front driver.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is.
So and that back axle is just a straight axle back there doing nothing but just to rotate two tires. So what part of town do you live in?
The West Valley.
Who got out there?
So, Glendale area.
Okay. The closest I can get to you is Harker's, Larry Harker's, 38. Oh, you know what? I got a better idea. I'm going to flesh out, tell everybody right now that I work for Discount as an automotive expert, Discount Tire. I think you should take it to a Discount Tire, and I think you should say to them in a nice way, I bought the tires from somebody else, but I've got this vibration. It's in the seat of my pants. Would you guys take a look at this? Because of all the places, and my son, you started at Discount Tire. And when did you graduate high school?
97.
Okay, so in 95 or something like that.
Yeah.
He worked for Discount Tire. And their training program is second to none of everybody out there. So maybe if you want a fresh pair of eyes, I think you should go to a Discount Tire.
Well, he said it was a chain store, so it's possible it was a Discount Tire.
It's not Discount. It's
okay.
Another.
Don't say it. Okay, we don't need to know who it is.
Okay.
I just
don't say it.
I think you need a fresh pair of eyes, and I think you need someone who specializes in balancing. Not one of your chain stores. People that actually do this for a living, that can diagnose the problem and fix.
Who up in his area there?
I mean, the only person I can even think of is Total, but they're at 16th Street in Camelback.
Well, let me qualify by saying this. I also work close to in Tempe, so I'm on both ends of town. So that's why it drives me nuts, because I'm highway driving all the time. So
okay, I only got 10 seconds. Salem Boys Auto, call and get an appointment. Alan will take a look at it for you if that's what you're alluding to. I got a 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're here having a whole lot of fun, and let's go to Tom. I think we didn't do Tom, or we were waiting on Tom. Okay, Tom, you got our full attention. How can we help you?
Yeah, hi, Mark. Enjoy the show. I've got a 2010 F-150, and being that it's a little bit older, it doesn't have navigation screen or anything, a little one-inch screen, you know, with the et cetera, and so anyhow, my electronic compass is always saying north. And so I looked in the book. I went and looked at YouTube, different things. And it says drive in a circle, blah, 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 blah. And it still says north.
Most of the time when we run into these kinds of situations with respect to the entertainment system, we usually have a stereo shop that we lean on, somebody that's really good with something like this. Do you guys have that?
Yeah.
Okay. Who would you use? Send him to.
Well, we got one that's just across the street behind us. So, but and it just depends where he's at. But yeah, somebody that's specialized in the entertainment system, it doesn't.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to go with one of the box store.
Okay,
places.
All right. And Sounds Good to Me is a stereo shop in Tempe on Broadway that's been around since Jesus was a baby, and they've always been able to pull those magic those chickens out of the hat and fix our problems that we have. But that's really what you have to do.
Or do a full vehicle scan and see if it says there's a compass, you know, signal loss or something like that, and it just, you know, then it's a hardware problem.
What about just, let's just pull both battery cables and touch the battery cables together and just discharge everything and start everything brand new?
That might work, too.
Okay, so yeah. Try that first, Tom. Just take both battery cables off, touch the battery cables together. And if you can't, then use a little jumper clip, you know, with alligator clips on each end of it. And basically you're touching the positive cable to the negative cable. And you're discharging all the capacitors and you're really wiping away a bunch of memory and stuff like that and see if that fixes it.
Okay, and that's with the battery out of the loop.
Yes.
Yes, yes. You're touching the cable ends together. The cable ends,
right.
Not the terminals. Because that'll
correct.
that'll be exciting for you. but just use a little jumper lead with two alligator clips on it and hook it to one to the negative and then just take the other one and touch it to the positive and count to 10 and you're done.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd try.
Or what is the name of that place in Tempe, the stereo place?
Sounds good to me. That's the guy I've used
good
before and I like him. Okay?
Terrific.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Okay, a caller didn't want to be on the air. He has an 82 Corvette with 65,000 miles. What was the question?
When he goes to fill up, only go up to 3/4 of tank, or he can fill it up, but it only says 3/4 of tank on the gauge? I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
All
right, Gil's our engineer. Fire up your mic and tell us what he said, Gil.
Yeah, he said he has 82 Corvette, 65,000 original miles. His gas gauge, once he fills the tank, it goes all the way, as he's running it, to 3/4 of a tank, and then after a while, it just stays at 3/4 of a tank, and he wants to know what the issue might be.
So either they got a level sensor or a dash issue. I mean, it moves, so I mean, it's not a signal problem.
Right.
The wire shorted or anything like that. So the sensor in the tank or the dash itself, I mean, that's
is it possible it's something with EVAP that's not allowing it to fill all the way up?
Not in 82.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. That's true.
That's true.
That's the reason why four heads are better than one.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. I don't know.
I guess the one question would be, is he putting less in it than he used to? If he's putting less in, then he's really not getting it full tank. But if he runs it all the way down and then he gets his whole 20 gallons in like he always has, then we know he's getting all the capacity in there. So then it's a sender or a dash issue.
Okay, so that's the end of the deal.
Yeah.
We don't know if we have a sender issue or a dash issue. It's going to be one of those two, and a couple of simple tests would be that. If you're listening to us, the owner of the Corvette, Kurtz Automotive is up at I-17 and Bell, and if you promise not to keep their technician on the phone for 2.5 days, then you can call and ask for Eric, and Eric can quickly explain our answer to you. But we're a little unclear as to what the question is.
Yes, sir.
But at Kurtz Automotive, I-17 and Bell, and there's only going to be one of you up there that has an 82 Corvette, and if you get like 20 people with an 82 Corvette, then just bail. Just bail. you just got to get out. Okay, and then the caller number two says he wants a new truck, and he says GM, Ford, Dodge, what? And he wants a new diesel truck, maybe a 3/4 ton diesel.
Well, did he specifically?
I don't think he specified diesel, but I think 4-wheel drive.
Yeah, it can either be diesel or gas.
Diesel or gas.
Did he say a specific brand, Gil?
A GMC truck.
GMC. What do you think?
Chevy or GM? GM would be third on my list.
Okay.
Out of the big three.
Yeah.
And you, Eric? Give us your 1, 2, 3.
The Ford and the Dodge are ranked there. They're just side by side. There's so many things. The Dodges are easier and simpler and a little bit less expensive to do things on. So in the long term, they have a tendency to be a little cheaper. The Fords probably build power a little better, a little smoother. So they rank high, you know, next to each other. But yeah, GM would be my third option.
Okay.
If you force me to buy a gas, I'd probably give up my driver's license. Because I'm not driving a gas 3/4 ton.
I don't think you would, Alan. I really don't.
I'm telling you.
Okay. So let's talk about real quick gas versus diesel. We're all diesel guys.
Yeah. Yep.
But what comes with diesel is a little bit of smoke every now and then, but it comes, we're all power. And they last forever, and you don't replace the spark plugs, and there's some real maintenance issues.
And they pull like crazy.
And they pull like crazy.
And he said 3/4 1 ton, so I'm assuming he's pulling some.
Okay.
There's no other reason to have a 1 ton unless you're actually pulling. So if he's talking a 40-foot trailer that's 18,000 pounds, I'm putting a gas rig there. It's going to be a diesel.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Anything bigger than 18 foot, you better have a diesel in my business.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't care if it's a half ton, three quarter ton, or one ton. If you're pulling more than 18 feet of what of trash behind you, you better have a diesel there. So, and then an aftermarket warranty. Okay. All of you in favor of aftermarket warranties, raise your hands. Raise your hands.
Yeah.
Well, that answers the question.
Yeah.
Aftermarket warranty, they're going to send some guy that used to be an auto mechanics teacher in Utah in the 1950s to our shop, and he's going to tell us that we're wrong about what's wrong with your motor, and then he's going to have us jump through hoops and chasing our tail for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, a couple of years, and then he's going to turn around and tell some yo-yo on the phone that this isn't a warrantyable issue.
Or if it is, they won't pay for nothing.
Well, yeah, you're speaking of the 1%. Because 99% of the time they deny it on the phone before we even get someone out here.
And if they don't deny it, they're willing to give us $35 a shop hour.
Oh, yes. And that's what I like. I like the people that say, all we do is pay $35 an hour. And I say to the customer, you know, you didn't obligate me to the $35 an hour. But let me just tell you, we hate aftermarket warranties every single aspect of that transaction. The guy that's on the phone, the guy that comes to look at the car, what's the repair going to be? What's the right repair going to be? Whose fault is it? And what's the percentage? And they want us to be the bad news bearer and say, well, they want you to pay 96% of the bill.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to do that. You call him and tell him that you're going to charge 90%, 6% of the bill to him. So aftermarket warranties, we hate them.
Unilaterally. Horrible.
Now, let me ask you a question. If we were to ask the dealer guys.
They love them.
Okay, never mind. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
I thought you meant the guys selling them because they get 50% of the selling
or
price
more.
For commission.
Okay, I was talking about the technicians.
Oh, I don't know about them.
I think they're going to be kind of like us.
Yeah.
Because they get treated the same.
Yeah.
I think we're all treated the same.
Yeah, the big money is in the selling them.
Okay. All righty, and we have open lines available. We have 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kurt, Alan, Eric, and Mark, we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. Let me get all my stuff situated. 46 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My email address is mark with a K at marksalem.com. Mark at marksalem. Salem is spelled like the cigarette. .com. So if you have any questions, you have any comments, if you're unhappy with whoever we teased, then just send them to mark at marksalem.com, and my wife will read them and let me know. And then another thing is you said something off the air, and I want to touch base on that. We all have all of us here, we have pretty strong feelings about aftermarket warranty companies.
Yes.
Because they never treat the customer right, and they always want us to financially participate in the baby.
Right. Yeah.
We didn't have no fun making the baby, and we haven't made any money on the baby, but we're going to be paying right. Along with everybody else.
Yeah.
And then you talked about gas and diesel.
Yeah, no, I just said, you know, there are downfalls to buying diesels as well. I mean, we are seeing, with all three of them, we're seeing an amazing amount. I know, Eric and Kurt said the same thing of problems with the emission system on those trucks. It does not seem to have gotten much better. And now with this new DEF with the urea, it's horrible. It's horrible, horrible, horrible. And so, I mean, there are downsides
what's
to that.
What's the fix? If I drive it like I stole it, am I going to be better off than the guy who pedals
definitely
going to
be better off on the exhaust side.
No idling time, hardly.
Yeah, but on the DEF side, there's nothing you can really do. I
no.
mean, that stuff is – I mean, you've seen it. I tell people all the time. You've seen it. You drop it on the ground when you're filling up your car, and it makes that white calcium. Well, that's what the inside of your tank and inside of the injectors and the urea injector,
right.
Inside of the heater and the pump and the level sensor. That's what all that looks like.
Well,
there's
no way. And just imagine, you're running 1,000 or 1,200 degree exhaust across that injector port, and it comes on, shuts off, and you just cook that instantly right on the tip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And what we're talking about is this is a way to treat the exhaust of a diesel so what comes out of the tailpipe is palatable, cleanable, and doesn't kill us, right?
Yeah.
So with the DEF, diesel exhaust fluid, I the analogy I use is when you start your charcoal fire, before you start your charcoal fire, you spray that charcoal flame stuff.
Yeah.
That's DEF.
Yeah.
We're just going to spray the exhaust and a whole bunch of stuff in the exhaust with DEF so that we can get that fire to burn bright red and we can clean up the soot and the trash that's coming out of the diesel,
yeah.
Right? Okay, DEF. What's the other one?
Urea.
DPF. Yeah. And that's
diesel particulate
filter. Yeah. And what we're doing there is you're not going to send not golf balls, but marble-sized pieces of carbon out the tailpipe. We're going to burn them up front.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just tell people, you see the old diesels, how they used to smoke like chimneys, and you look at the new ones and they don't smoke at all.
Okay.
That's the difference. That filter's catching all that.
So the exhaust system is the weak link of the diesels, but if you drive it like you stole it, are you going to have more or less problems?
The more miles, like he said, the least out of the time is the best you can do. Miles.
When you do drive it hard. Don't be afraid to throttle it up. Don't be afraid when you're climbing, going up to Flagstaff, hauling your boat or your whatever. Just put it down and go. That's right. The computer won't let you melt the motor.
No.
Shouldn't let you melt the motor. And so you just drive it like you stole it. A lot. And frankly, we don't have any problem. I got 150,000 miles on that 1-ton Dodge of mine, that 12. It, of course, doesn't have a lot of emissions because it is a 12, and that's why I bought it. But I haven't had any problems.
I've got a 19 with 60,000 on my Cummins, and I haven't had any trouble. But I don't let my wife drive it and then sit there and talk on the phone with the air conditioning on for 20 minutes to finish a call idling, because idle time is horrible in these things.
And that's part of the machoism of having a diesel, is when you pull up to the store to go in and get a six-pack of Budweiser for the football game on, you got the diesel idling outside and everybody can hear the clatter. This is the way it is.
You don't hear no clatter no more.
You hear it on the excursion. I'm sorry. What's the total?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. I mean, you can barely hear yourself thinking that thing.
Oh, boy. All righty. Daniel, how are you and how can we help you?
Yes. Good morning. Yeah, I had a question about having a recommended manufacturer service done at like IGO businesses, like your gentleman's places, and if you've ever run into any issues with compliance to the warranty with the manufacturer's warranty.
What he's asking is he's asking, okay, so, you know, I'm just going to use Honda as an example, has a 60K
service. Yeah, like
we do,
yeah, like
60K,
at 60,000 miles.
Okay.
Does that not hold up to do the warranty? The short answer is no. As long as the stuff is getting done, and you have documentation of it, there's no issue there.
And the shop is still in business and wasn't recently indicted for embezzlement and fraudulent stuff. As long as the shop's still around. So, all the big guys in town, the independent shops and the dealerships, we've all been around a long time. So when we do it, we have records, and we also bought the filter and we have the receipt for that day, and it fits your filter. And you're the only one that came in that was a Dodge diesel. We have all of that.
Yeah. And personally, okay. I had a truck that had a extended powertrain warranty.
Uh-huh.
And I had a rear end go out at 70,000 miles on one of my older trucks. I had documentation and I've serviced it. They didn't question nothing. I just had to show that I did the services. So they don't care when you go in for powertrain warranties, as long as you can show a receipt of the service.
And the services is an important consideration in the documents and stuff. And follow the owner's manual, not what you're told, because there's a whole lot of shops out there that have taken that 100,000 mile and moved it back to 45 and 50. And now they're representing this needs to be done at 45 and 50 when the manual says that's 100K.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to duck and bob and weave between the guy behind the counter and your owner's manual. But the owner's manual is going to trump everybody else.
Yeah. I have this conversation a lot with customers when they call and they say, what's a 60K service with this Honda? Well, Honda may have that's a $799, $799 bucks. Well, for us, I tell my customers, if we pull the transmission dipstick and it's clean, smells sweet, and is bright, beautiful red, I'm not changing that just because they say to change that. And I think that's the difference too. They're happy to drain that perfectly red fluid and fill it back up and charge you for it. Where at least here in our shop, we don't do that.
But we might very well say to them, okay, it calls her for 60, but you come in every 10,000 miles for an oil change. So we got it on our computer to check it again at 80,
absolutely
70 or 80 or whatever.
Yeah.
So it looks really good right now. And if I did change it, my fear would be is that after you spend $300, $400, $500, $600 me changing everything, that you look at it and go, what's the same color as it was before.
Yeah. The other thing too is it works opposite too. If you have a
30,000-pound trailer behind your truck from day one, and it calls for rear diff service at 50, but I see it at 30, and it's absolutely peanut butter in there. I'm going to change it, you know, earlier, too. So it goes both ways.
And that's why you have to be able to trust your technician. And I think the difference in most of the situations is this. In the independent shop market, taking the customer in and having them stick their finger in the differential and pull out the peanut butter is something we love to do.
Yeah.
All right? And the women love to go into the shop and show them, this is a shock absorber that's leaking and this is one that's not. That kind of stuff. This is the dog and pony show, the show and tell. That's, you're not likely to get that at certain kinds of shops. But in the independent market, let me ask you a question. How many times has somebody said to you, well, am I allowed in the shop?
Yeah.
Because our industry, the car repair industry, has created this thought process that no one's allowed in the shop. Well, that's BS. As long as you're escorted by one of our staff, you're covered. Yeah. You're fine. Yeah. Everything's good.
Yeah.
So we're going to take you out there, and we're going to have you stick your finger in the peanut butter. And this is clean fluid. This is what I'm going to put in. And see that right there? It looks like your dog's sick.
Yeah.
and that's it. So there's a difference in who's going to do the service and what kind of freedom they have. Another thing is in the independent market, it's not uncommon for us to have the technician who did the work as a part of the conversation. And unfortunately, in many of the other bigger operations, they're not going to pull the technician off the floor.
No.
And maybe he doesn't present well. Maybe he didn't brush his teeth that morning. Maybe he's covered with tattoos. Alan?
Well, yeah. I mean, and keep in mind, too, we're not obligated by anybody where some other people are. You know, they're obligated. They have a higher person to answer to. Mm-hmm. Where we don't have that. We have a lot more freedom to do what's in our customer's best interest.
Yes. And what you're talking about is many times in the structure of an auto repair shop, there's somebody in the tower that's telling everybody that we're selling tranny services at 30,000 miles. I don't care what the manual says. That's what you're talking about.
Well, yeah. What I meant was is, I'm going to use Honda, but, you know, the local Honda dealership has to answer to Honda Corporate.
Okay.
They always, you know what I'm saying? They always have that. So if Honda Corporate puts out a rule, they got to abide by it. We don't have those.
And then they also have, they also Honda, a Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Toyota, all of them. They can put out stuff, but we need to increase alignments. We need to increase the sales of differentials, flushes and fills and stuff. We don't have those responsibility.
No.
Folks, you're going to get the best service from your shop if you just go in for regular oil changes and if they do their normal inspections. But what you don't want to find is a shop that every time you bring it in for an oil change, they give you $1,000 worth of work that you need to have done. And then you say to them, well, show me in the owner's manual where it says that. And they say, no, your owner's manual is not written for Arizona. And at that point, you just got to punt. You got to get the hell out of there and go find another shop. Because the owner's manual, and then if you want, you can say to him, well, Mr. Smarty Pants, why don't you order me a manual for Arizona?
Yeah.
And let's see what we get then.
I had a dealership tell me that one time. I was floored. Oh, no, that doesn't apply. We're in extreme climate. Oh, could I see that manual? That one didn't come. Where do I print that off?
Tell me where that's not extreme by the extreme standards in the United States.
You know what's funny? I asked that question, and you know what he said?
Huh.
Nowhere. Florida has humidity. You know, San Diego has salt. You know, XYZ. Seattle has rain.
Moisture.
Texas has heat.
Yeah.
It's all
different.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, we're
okay.
So,
thank you.
So basically, we've created this square box that's zip code created, and it's done, and it's created by the people in the zip code that want to sell more work to your car. That's what it's all
Absolutely.
About. Because do we care if it has Florida plates? What does Florida plates say? What does Denver? What does Colorado say? It says you might have some salt damage.
Yeah.
Let's take a look underneath the car. Oh yeah, this has been in a salt. We see it all the time.
Yeah.
But it's not anything that all of a sudden we sell you a complete undercoating and paint the underside of your car and for $2,000. That's not. I mean, do you guys undercoat cars?
No.
The only undercoating we do comes out of a can.
Yeah.
And everyone, you had to clean the frame to put a ground on it, and you recoat it so you don't have rust.
There you go.
That's it.
That's it. That's the time we're going to get out the sanding discs and get down to the clean metal so we can get a good ground on
it.
That's all. All righty. Thanks for spending your Saturday with me, Kurt.
Thank you.
Kurt's Automotive. Eric, I'm sorry. Whatever you were drinking the day you hired him and you said yes to when he wanted to marry your daughter, have you had any regrets?
Very few.
Oh!
When I talked to Alan's wife's dad, he said the same thing. Anyway, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Our website is MarkSalem.com, and we're here every Saturday right here on 960 KKNT talking about cars. But if you have a question, you can send an email, Mark at MarkSalem.com, but give me a phone number so I can call you from my block number and discuss your problem.